Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Record Club. We're almost to 60. We're like real close to 60 record clubs. Can you believe that? That's 60 albums we listened to together. I'm impressed with us. Honestly, I'm impressed. Let's see, what number are we on even? I'm loading up the Patreon right now to see what I just posted. Oh my God, this is 60. Well, shit. We are at 60. How about that? So the 60th record we're going to listen to today is this one by the band. Let me tell you, I will not miss Googling research for this album and this band because it's so the band. So generic. Right? I mean, that's the point, I suppose. But like, God damn, like it's been... Who was influenced by the band? And it's like, okay, can you name yourself something else that's easier for me? Make it easier for me, the band, but they didn't, whatever. We're going to move on. We're going to get past it. So last week when Jenny chose this, I swear to God, I muted that. When Jenny chose this, I... was like, I don't know the band. And then I saw in the comments on Patreon where it's like, he literally just covered the band with Bob Dylan. And for some reason, I didn't put the two together at the time. I was like, oh, wait, the band. I have to talk about the band. But if it was like, if their name was like Tree Trunk, before it was like Bob Dylan and Tree Trunk, and then I got Tree Trunk, I was like, oh, I know. Okay, got it. I've already covered this. But the band is, it goes in and it goes out. I just don't think about it. So anyways... I do know the band. I've just learned about the band recently. And so now we're going to talk about their solo stuff. Ironically enough, not too far off from talking about Bob Dylan and the Big Pink. We talked about that house where they recorded the basement tapes before. They recorded their first album in the same place, the same room where they recorded the basement tapes. The band seems to have an interesting history where they were kind of just... they were kind of just around the music scene as a band together. They were covering, what was the actual, something Hawks. They were a, backing band for rockabilly singer Ronnie Hawkins in the mid 60s. And then obviously they gained recognition for, working with Bob Dylan, 'cause that was a big deal back then. So they inspired, and this album in particular, so it seems, inspired so many fucking people. The list of people who said that they were inspired by the band and this album are the Grateful Dead, Eric Clapton, George Harrison, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Led Zeppelin, Elvis Costello, Elton John, Fish, and Pink Floyd. And that's just a list they gave me right off the top of the bat. Like, there's more people. So they say that this album invented a whole genre of music. The Americana genre of music was kind of started with this album, which is pretty fucking crazy. You know, because I was wondering, listening to it, and I'll tell you right off the bat, like, I have, of the 60 albums we've listened to, I have liked more than this one. Not to say I didn't like it, dislike it, you know, it was fine. But like, I was like, number 57, huh? 57. But I think the amount of influence that this album has, you know, given people and where music is today because of this band, maybe that's why it's so high up. People really do fucking love it, though. They really do. So we're going to get into it and see if we love it or not. So the band was a Canadian-American rock band formed back in Toronto, Ontario in 1967. Consisted of Canadians Rick Danko, who did bass, guitar, vocals, and fiddle. Garth Hudson, who did organ, keyboards, accordion, saxophone. Richard Manuel, piano, drums, vocals. Robbie Robertson, guitar, songwriting, vocals, piano, percussion, and American... Levon Helm, who did drums, vocals, mandolin, guitar, and bass. So they kind of did it all, which is apparent listening to it that this is just a group of like really talented musicians who I feel like the best musicians are the ones who just like can walk over to any instrument and just play it, which is just like truly remarkable. To me, I don't know, you know, I can't play any instruments, honestly. So maybe that's why. But like, I really do like, oh yeah, you don't need drums in this song. I'll do the mandolin. It's fine. Like that's crazy. To me, that's crazy. I also really love every song sung by Levon Helm. I thought was, I love that he's drumming and singing at the same time. I always like that. It's weird because you see guitar, people do it all the time. Guitarists sing, and that I don't think anything of that. But we see a drummer do it. It's like, oh, fuck yeah. That's, now you're talented. And it's all the same shit, right? But like the fact that you can like play the drums by like leaning over, I think it's a cool look. It's a pretty cool look. Anyways, so this is their second album, or their sophomore album, if you will, released back in September 22nd, Sawyer's birthday, 1969. Wait a minute, let's go back. When did they form again? They formed in 1967. That's a pretty busy 2 years to... Is that right? Yeah, 67 is when they formed. And then they teamed up with Bob Dylan in the 1966... Wait a minute. Okay, time out. In 1958 to 1963, the group was known as the Hawks, backing rockabilly Ronnie Hawkins. In the mid-60s, then in 1966, they became the Bob Dylan's band, backing Bob Dylan. Then they changed their band after they left Bob Dylan, changed their name to The Band in 1967. So they already were established together. Then they released The Big Pink, which is their first album. And then the second album is this one, sometimes called The Brown Album because of the cover. Now, I'll say that they recorded this. So they recorded the first one in New York City and Woodstock area where The Big Pink was. And they wanted a different feel for this one, so they went to Los Angeles, and they ended up recording in Sammy Davis Jr.'s old house, and like they just kind of converted that into a at-home studio, and made this record. Then, it did well. I mean, people. I mean, here's the thing: is that like critically, this album is just like hailed as like one of the greatest things ever done. I mean, obviously it's high up on the list, but like I'm looking at like what everyone gave it, and it's like Pitchfork gave it a 10 out of 10, Village Voice A+, Rolling Stone 5 out of 5, All Music 5 out of 5, Entertainment Weekly A, Music Hound 5 out of 5, Q Magazine 5 out of 5. It's just, everything is just like super, like you can't do better than this album apparently. So let's start listening to it a little bit and figure out what we think. We start with the first song called Across the Great Divide. Well, I should unmute it. Huh? Here we go. Standing by your window in pain, a pistol in your hand, and I beg you, so this is a very, I mean, I'm not going to say it's weird because they recorded this in Los Angeles, but it definitely sounds like they had Southern influences throughout this entire album. And a lot of it gives off like Southern Alabama vibes to me. And I guess the songwriting, but the Across the Great Divide is a song that they wanted to make sound as old as the hills. Does it sound as, I mean, it sounds kind of funky to me. I don't really know if it sounds as old as the hills to me. The lyrics start with singer asking his wife, Molly, to put down the gun. They said the song appears to be set in a one-horse town in the Old West. So I guess that really wouldn't be Alabama. That would be like New Mexico or Arizona or some shit. And the divide they're speaking of I think is, they say it's the divide between men and women. So that's the notes I had on this song. I think this song is good. It's a, I mean, again, I don't dislike this anything on this album. You know, I think I honestly went into it with a little bit of a, like, okay, thrill me, because it's so high up on the list. It's like 57. So I think maybe I was a little more expecting, like, okay, knock my socks off then if it's so high up. You know, maybe I'm giving it not its fair shake. Maybe. The next song is Rag Mama Rag. Okay. The way this starts reminds me of you know what I'm talking about? I just think of it as like a, what is it, like a chili commercial from the 90s or Pace Picante or some kind of fucking commercial where they played that. It gives me the same. I first heard this and I was like, oh, reminds me of that 90s commercial. Am I crazy? Right. Rag Mama Rag, the band considered it kind of like an afterthought of a song. They kind of just like were just didn't think it was that, but that was okay. But I guess the reception of the song is like the fans love this song. It's like one of their favorites. It's a fan favorite. Drummer Lee Von Helm moved from the drums to the mandolin for this song. And it's about a hapless country bumpkin who can't control his girlfriend. You know, I don't listen to the lyrics very often, so I don't really know what the fuck a lot of times they're talking about, but apparently that's what this is about. Yeah, okay, so the next song is one of their most popular songs, and it is The Night They Drove Down Old... try it again. The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. Let's see. I think I like Lee Von Helm singing the best. Because there's a lot of different lead singers in this band, but I think I like the songs that he sings the best. His voice sounds good to me. You know, I will say that I really did notice after learning that he was drumming at the same time he was singing, that it was the way that the it rolls and then it ends kind of like in a weirder beat, but the vocals are always on point to that. And it's just like, oh, he knows he's controlling all of this. You know, I kind of liked, I really noticed that he was definitely singing and drumming at the same time when I realized that later on when I researched it. This song is tells the last days of the Civil War, and it's from just a guy who was on the Confederate side, and I think he realizes that, like, he's fucked. Kind of. Maybe I misinterpreted that, but that's kind of what I got from this. Now, that goes... all my handwritten notes are... That's all I had time for was those three songs. So we're just going to go through the other ones and... see what we can learn together. I know of a little bit, but not everything. Not enough to confidently tell you. So we're going to do this together. When You Awake is the next song. I swear to God, I get so many texts when we do this show. House that brings a smile, sat upon my grandpa's knee. Okay. Now, I like this song a lot. I like all the harmonizing together. I think it's really nice. The lyrics concern a young boy who received advice from Ollie, who may be a friend or relative. Ollie tells the boy how difficult life can be. That boy is a fool, that it's a mean old world, and to be careful where you step and watch what you eat. The boy turns to his grandfather for comfort. His grandfather's words comfort the boy, assuring him of his love, but do not contradict the harsh words from Ollie. Like, Ollie may be an asshole, but he has some points. Listen to Ollie when you awake. Maybe that means, like, when you awake, like, when you, like, become an adult and, like, you can, like, see life more clearly. Maybe. I'm just guessing. I don't know. Maybe I'm way off. Okay. The next song is Up on Cripple Creek. What could that mean? I don't know. Now, this is funky, right? Now we're getting a little funkier here. When I get over this mountain, you know where I wanna go. This sounds so 70s to me, and it's, you know, 1969, so it's close, but it sounds so 70s. Part. Oh man. How about that? Up on Cripple Creek is sung from the point of view of a truck driver who goes to Lake Charles, Louisiana to stay with a local girl, Bessie, from whom he has a history. In the song, he gambles, he drinks, he listens to music, spends time with little Bessie, who takes an active role in the things that happen in the song, like all the things that he's doing. She's with him. She expresses her opinions and further endearing herself to the narrator. At the end of the song, after exhausting himself on the road, he talks about going home to his woman, Big Mama, but is tempted to return again to Bessie. Now, people are saying, like, is he cheating on his wife, Big Mama, with Bessie, or... They say that truckers also use the term Big Mama to refer to their dispatcher over the CB radio. So maybe he's just back on the road and he is not cheating. He's just going back to work. So there is debate on whether the guy is cheating on his wife or just, you know, living his life on the road. Okay, so... I get confused because they mention, I don't know if it's in this song, but they mention Spike Jones by name. One verse has a singer, Bessie, listening and commenting on the music in 1940s and 50s. Band leader Spike Jones, Robertson said of Jones, "I was a Spike Jones admirer. I thought he treated music with a healthy thing. He could take a song and do his own impression. That was so odd and outside the box, in many cases hilarious. I liked him a lot." Is what the lyrics are in the song. Obviously, I'm thinking of a different Spike Jones. The Spike Jones I know was not a 1940s and 50s band leader. He was a director and in Jackass as well. Okay. I like this song. Up on Cripple Creek is a great song. Definitely funkier. Yeah, I like it. Whispering Pines is next. Now, what I do like about this album a lot is that, like, you don't know what the next song is going to be. They do sound very, like, the last song and this song sound nothing alike. It can be two different albums, really, but they had the same theme as here of, like, the country, the, you know, is it, and I like that.
Star shine. That's just enough.
Okay, that gives you a little bit of an idea about that. Whispering Pines is a ballad on the theme of loneliness. Manuel wrote the melody and the vocal line, but could not come up with the lyrics, so Robinson wrote the lyrics. According to Robinson, Richard was always having this very plaintive attitude on his voice and something just in his sensitivity as a person. I tried to follow that and go with it musically. How about that? We both thought this is a very good song. The lyrics are filled with images of loneliness, such as the lonely foghorn crashing the waves of the titular? That's right, titular Whispering Pines. And they're talking about the pines they're talking about are the these trees they're imagining in Woodstock. So I kind of do feel like, although the songs... What happened? Am I still going? I don't know if it happened in your screen or not, but all of a sudden, like, my confidence model is completely gone. So I don't know what happened with the computer. I don't. What is happening? Anyways, I'll keep going as if everything is fine, but I'll have to go back and review the tapes because I don't know what just happened to me in this recording. So hopefully everything's fine. It'd be a bummer if it wasn't. What was I going to say? That fucked me all up. What I was saying was, like, you know, the last song, although it sounded different, was about a trucker going back on the road. And this is a song about loneliness, which is, you know, kind of notorious for it's lonely on the road when you're, you know, you're a truck driver by yourself. So maybe it kind of goes into each other a little bit. And maybe that's why they put them back to back. But I don't know. This is not my favorite song on the album. It's fine, but, you know, it's okay. I swear to God, I'm going to figure out how to mute my phone next podcast, because I feel like every time I do this, you guys keep hearing that same chime, and I don't know. I can spend 30 seconds to figure out how to turn it off, and I just say, oh, no one's going to text me, and then I get 1,000 texts. So I will chill the fuck out, and I will learn how to do this. So sorry. Okay, so next we got... I can't pronounce it. Jimena Surrender. Jemima and Jemima, same spelling. Duh. Okay, so Jemima Surrender. I kind of, you know, this is the first song on side two. Again, Levon Helm sings it, but not my favorite of his songs. It's fine. The song expresses the singer's sexual desire for the Jemima of his title. So, Jemima Surrender, like, please let me have sex with you. The band FAQ author Peter Aaron notes that it builds on the amorous hubris, Peter Aaron's using some big words here, of the group's single from the album Rag Mama Rag. Sexual double entendres in the song include the singer's offer that I'll bring over my Fender and I'll play all night for you, which Robertson punctuates, huh? With a lead guitar riff. Another line states that I hand you my rod and you hand me that line. Steve Millward interprets Jemima Surrender as a gently satirical song about the hapless country bumpkin again who can't control his girlfriend. So this same country bumpkin is not controlling his girlfriend. We've already covered that before. And what song was that? Rag Mama Rag? Oh, yeah. So it kind of go together. So I don't know. Yeah, again, not my favorite song on this album. It's fine. Rockin' Chair. You hear that, like, mandolin? I've spent my whole life at sea, and I'm pushing age 73. Now there's only one place that was meant for me. Oh, to be home again. This I could see definitely in some, like, fucking bar in, like, Alabama, Louisiana, Kentucky, you know, like, in the background of some movie, you know? Even the harmonica sounds very, like, Western-y, too. So maybe it's, like, as we said, like, I'm saying South, but now I'm saying, like, Western, you know, then that's obviously Northwest, not Northwest, it's just Southwest. But, like, I just feel like it definitely gives off, like, some kind of vibe. Either the Old West or we're talking about the South. We're talking about something here. And Rockin' Chair, obviously, I think is kind of synonymous with me with, like, a Southern thing, which is a weird thought because they got rocking chairs everywhere, but I don't know. That's me. Look Out Cleveland is the next song. Now, this is a way different vibe than the last song, right? Way different. Look out, Cleveland. Storm is coming through. And it's running right up on you. Look out, Houston. There'll be thunder on the air. God damn it. These fucking texts, bro. Okay, so this song, Look Out Cleveland, differs from most of the songs on the band's first two albums. That's more influenced by blues music more than rural music. Elton John's early song, Take Me to the Pilot, appears to be influenced by this song. So Elton John, as you already talked about, was like a fan of this album. That song in particular, Take Me to the Pilot, was influenced because of this song, which is kind of cool. Okay, so let's go to the next song. Next song, Jawbone, which I'll say is my favorite song on this album. Here we go. I'm gonna let this play for a little bit because I like it so much. I'm gonna let it play. Here's the chorus. This part right here. Also be honest with everyone here because I do feel like I'm more honest here than anywhere else. I did just Google how to fucking mute texts because I can't. There's so many. How do I get so many texts? It's just a lot from, and it's not just like one person. It's all over. It's just like everywhere. It's wild. Anyways, sorry about all the dinging in this. Please forgive me. It won't happen again until next week when I forget to turn this off, but I now know how to turn it off. So we're learning something today. Okay, so Jawbone, I couldn't really figure out and find info really about what it was about. But I think that the music behind it I like the most. Like the bam 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 bam. It's like super catchy and good. So really like Jawbone. Okay. The next song is Unfaithful Servant. Let's talk about that. Okay, so the lyrics of Unfaithful Servant concern a servant who is who offended the mistress of the house and is being sent away. The singer offers sympathy to the servant. The identity of the singer is ambiguous. You don't really know who's singing the song. Maybe it's like the guy of the house, or I don't know. I can know. According to Jason Schneider, the singer is a conscious friend coming to the aid of the former servant. But according to Nick DeRizzo, it could be a master bidding goodbye to his handmaiden after an embarrassing affair is revealed. So it could be either. It's slower. It's not my favorite song, but their album's wrapping up here. We have one more song after this. I kind of feel like it's a good place to put this song. It's a fine song, but, you know, didn't do as much for me as other ones, maybe. And now the last song is King Harvest, parentheses, Has Surely Come. We're back to the funk to end it out, you know? Born in the fields, I listen to the rice when the wind blows across the water. King Harvest is surely come. She's so good to me, and I'm bound to come out on top. That's where she said I should be. I will hear every word the prosper say. Okay, so I will say I like that they ended it kind of on an upbeat song. I think that it's talking about a labor union organizer who appears to be promising to improve things. The narrator tells his new associates, "I'm a union man now, all the way, but is perhaps ashamed of his homelessness and begs them, just don't judge me by my shoes." And some sources speculate that events depicted in the song, it went black again. Uh-oh. We're back. Are we back? I don't fucking know what's going on. This is a cursed episode. If you're able to see this episode, it's a fucking miracle. So we got audio dings. We got screens going black. I don't fuck you guys. That's the one thing about sometimes I'm doing this show and I'm the only person in the studio. And that's kind of, you know, well, you need a crew sometimes. You know, I try to just not involve, you know, bother people all the time. Like, hey, can you, but what is happening today? I don't know. Anyways, what was I saying? Some sources speculate that events depicted in the song are a reference to the organizing drives of the communist-affiliated Trade Union Unity League, which created a sharecropper unions from 1928 to 1935 throughout the U.S. South. I don't know where you get that from, but that's some people are speculating, so be it. Whatever. So yeah, that is the album. I liked this album. I did. You know, I'm not sure if I would rank it number 57, but I definitely see and I get why it's here because of all the influence it's had on people. For me, I'm going to give it a 3.5 piece of vinyl. It's totally a good album, but, you know, not my favorite, not the best for me. And again, I'm just an idiot. I'm just a guy. Like, don't, if you love the band and this album, please don't take offense to my opinions. This is just something I've learned this week and listened to the first time. Okay, let's see what Rolling Stone magazine had to say about the band. The band was 4/5 Canadian. Drummer Levon Helm was from Arkansas, but their second album was all American. Guitarist Robbie Robertson songs vividly evoke the country's pioneer age, Across the Great Divide, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. While reflecting the state of the nation in the 1960s, the band's long life on the road resonates with the brawn of Garth Hudson's keyboards and Helm's juke joint attack. But Robertson's stories truly live in Helm's growl, Rick Danko's high tenor, and Richard Manuel's spectral croon. Somebody once had a tear in his voice, Helm said, Emmanuel. Richard had one of the richest textured voices I had ever heard. That was a spectral croon. I never heard that. A tear in your voice. I can see that, though. There's a lot of emotion there, for sure. Okay, now we're going to talk about Sly and the Family Stone family affair. Let me pull that up real quick. Sly and the Family Stone. Now, when I think of Sly and the Family Stone, I think of everyday people, right? Was that commercial or what? What, you know this song, right? I feel like it's a commercial, but I can't think of what it's for. But anyways, we're talking about that song. Sorry, we're talking about Family Affair. Speaking of funk, you can't get funkier than this. It's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair.
One child grows up to be somebody that just loves to learn at all. Another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them.
Okay, so that is, I had never heard that song before. Maybe I'm alone here, but this song was brand new to me. It was a 1971 number one hit single. It was, I think this is their biggest hit to date. I mean, it's number 57 of all time, so I guess that makes sense. Released November 6, 1971. It was markedly different from the earlier Sly and the Family Stone hits. And the engineering consultant Richard Tiles muted most of Sly Stone's guitar parts while emphasizing the electric piano played by Billy Preston. Editing and the rhythm box sound like a heartbeat, according to, editing in the rhythm box sound to sound like a heartbeat. My reading today has been atrocious. So sorry. For never hearing this song before, I liked it a lot. It's pretty good. I would again give it probably 3.5 stars for this. Very funky. Psychedelic even. But yeah, it's pretty good. I liked it. Okay. Let's move on past the technical glitches and everything else, and let's see what we're listening to next. What could it be? I don't even know, dude. I don't even know. We got 289. Close. We got Post by Bjork. Now, have I listened to this album before? I don't know if I've listened to an entire Bjork album before. Let's check out Bjork. Post, 1995, and then listen to 289. Is Bruce Springsteen, Atlantic City, which I thought we maybe did cover already in the album we got from him. Did we do Atlantic City? Maybe we got Asbury Park. I'm getting confused. Anyways, doesn't matter. We'll figure it out next week. That's next week's problem. Listen to Bjork Post and listen to Atlantic City by Bruce Springsteen. And I'll see you next week. God, I love you. Thanks for watching. You're the best.